Do you, Chris, take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? Do you promise to barrage her with obscure facts concerning comics, movies, TV shows, and toys?
I do.
And Cindy, do you take this man-child to be your lawfully wedded husband? Do you promise to humor him by engaging him in his obsessive ramblings, for better or worse, in pre-crisis or in post?
Sure, why not?
Then by the power invested in me by the High Father of the Fourth World, I now pronounce you Supermates. You may podcast with the bride.
Hello and welcome to episode 33 of Supermates, the Husband and Wife Geekcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Cindy.
And today we're going to talk about Wonder Woman.
Woohoo!
This is Cindy's pick, actually. I kind of had another idea for a show, which is like, I want to do Wonder Woman 77. I'm like,
I did not have that whiny tone either.
You did too.
Well, you're always picking what we do. By golly.
Well, I mean, all you got to do is suggest something, and here we are, so.
Anyway, continue.
So we thought we would cover the recent Wonder Woman 77 comic. They have done a digital Wonder Woman 77 comic in the vein of the Batman 66 comic. Just like the Batman comic, it is based on the television series. In the case of Wonder Woman, it is based on, of course, the Linda Carter series, but specifically the CBS version of the show after it switched to modern times. When CBS bought the show, ABC had aired the Kathy Lee Crosby movie that we discussed with Gene Hendricks, and we'll get back to later. And they also aired the initial pilot film with Linda Carter and the subsequent TV movies and then short season one that was set during World War II. Well, they kind of dragged their heels about renewing the show, and so Warner Brothers said, you know what, fine, this show's a hit. We'll shop it around to the other guys. And back then there were three networks. And CBS said, hey, yeah, we'll take it, but why don't you change it to modern times? We think that you can get more story, different types of stories out of it. And probably also it was cheaper.
Right.
Because they could buy clothes off the rack. And
right, they didn't have to do sets from 30 years before.
Yeah, and they didn't have to make sure that everybody was in period clothes and they had period cars. And so the series jumped to modern as of 1977
right.
times. So this comic special that came out that collected the digital adventures set in that 77 universe. But before we got into that, we thought it would make sense to cover the kind of pilot film for the second version of the show.
Right, where they switched from the 40s to the 70s.
Right. So it's the New Adventures of Wonder Woman, first episode, The Return of Wonder Woman. So we thought we'd start there. The original air date was September 16th, 1977, starring Linda Carter as Wonder Woman, of course.
Best Wonder Woman ever!
Yeah, about only Wonder Woman ever, really.
Because she is the embodiment of Wonder Woman.
I know, no, I'm totally with you on that. I mean, that's what I'm saying, is even as much as I love Christopher Reeve, and I think he is Superman, you've got some people that think that George Reeves is Superman. I won't argue with them, because I love George Reeves as
Superman.
Right,
right, right.
And then there's a few people that still think Kirk Allen was a better Superman. But with Superman, there has been so many different actors that played him. And some better, of course, some better than others. I don't think anybody will jump up and say, Dean Cain's my favorite Superman. If you're out there, write in and say, Dean Cain's my favorite Superman. That's fine. But with Wonder Woman, there's been nobody else in live action that's made it to the screen. I mean, there's been a few attempts.
Right, right.
Pilot with Adrian Pilecki that was out a few years ago. But until Gal Gadot, you know, steps on the screen as Wonder Woman in Batman v Superman, there have been no other live action Wonder Woman since Linda Carter.
Right.
So they got some big red boots to fill.
That's right. Speaking of, I mean, this just made me think, you know, of Hot Toys. And I'm just putting my feelers out there and just letting you know. You know, we have the Christopher Reeve, we have Michael Keaton, we have Chris Evans, Linda Carter. When they make the Hot Toys of her, she will be coming to this house.
Oh, yeah, yeah, if they do that, yeah.
I know, I'm just saying, you know.
Well, yeah.
I'm just putting it out there.
You got no argument with me, you know.
Okay.
They've got Adam West and Burt Ward, too.
Right,
so.
Right, but, you know, yeah. Just saying.
Okay, and speaking of Adam West and Burt Ward, Lyle Wagner, who was almost Batman, as Steve Trevor.
Right.
Norman Burton as Joe Atkinson, guest starring Fritz Siever as Dr. Solano, Betty Ackerman as Acalepia. I never did quite how they pronounce that. She's the doctor on Paradise Island. Special guest stars Jessica Walter, yes, her, as Gloria, and Beatrice Straight as the Queen, who they never call Hippolyta.
Right.
Written by Stephen Kandel, directed by Alan Crossland.
It opens up with Somewhere Over the Caribbean Today, 1977. U.S. government security agent Steve Trevor flies in a private jet with two nuclear scientists and two nuclear engineers. They discuss plans for a nuclear power plant.
Say it right, Shag. Sorry. Shag can never say it right. He's a Firestorm fan.
We have just returned from vacation, but I will smack that smile off your face.
They discuss
plans for a nuclear... Shit.
Ow. Well, there's been presidents that couldn't say it right, so don't feel bad.
Somewhere Over the Caribbean Today, 1977. U.S. government security agent Steve Trevor flies in a private jet with two scientists and two engineers. They discuss plans for a power plant in Latin America and the potential for attacks on that proposed plant by terrorists. Their destination is a top-secret conference in the country of Samara.
Within Dr. Solano's headquarters, secluded in Washington, D.C., Steve and his guests are being watched by Dr. Solano and his assistant. As the plane passes over the Bermuda Triangle, Solano takes the opportunity to jam the plane's communications via remote control. Then the bartender and Solano's employee begins to gas the plane's occupants, including the pilots. As the plane nosedives toward the ocean, Solano loses track of it due to mysterious interference of the Bermuda Triangle.
Paradise Island, an uncharted body of land in the Bermuda Triangle. Princess Diana spots the plane as it enters the island's magnetic field, which brings it under the Amazon's control to land. Diana enters the plane to find the occupants unconscious. And a man who looks exactly like her old friend and partner, Steve Trevor, who was the last man who landed on her island back in 1942.
You seem concerned about this man. Well, it's just that he looks exactly like someone I knew once. Only that man would have to be over 60 years old.
Diana learns that this man is her Steve's son.
No wonder he looked familiar to you.
I know even his name. Steve Trevor?
Ordinary humans marry and breed, and their children grow into adults. He was named after his father, the late Major General Steve Trevor.
He looks so much like him. Ordinary humans have a sort of immortality at that.
I'm more interested in the reason the aircraft landed on Paradise Island.
Well, the scientific council examined the data and questioned the people under light hypnosis. The plane was to be taken over by one of them, one of the crew, Joseph Gorham.
Why?
The man only knows that he was to take over the plane, and then he would be instructed where to land it by an international terrorist group.
Diana discusses the situation with her mother, the Queen, and suggests an emissary be sent back to Man's World to investigate this threat. The Queen forbids her daughter from returning to the role of Wonder Woman, but the Amazon ruling council votes in favor of sending Diana back to Man's World. However, Diana's cousin, Evadine, challenges Diana to a round of bullets and bracelets for the right to go back to Man's World. The challenge is a short one, as Diana manages to deflect all of the bullets shot at her target and score a point on her competitor.
Asclepia puts Steve under hypnotic suggestion to accept Diana as his new assistant, Diana Prince. A reluctant queen gives her daughter the magic bracelets, tiara, costume with the secret belt of strength, and lasso of truth and forgetfulness. The garb of justice, as she says. With these items in hand, Diana spins and transforms once again into Wonder Woman. Her mother reminds her, without these items in the outside world, Diana is an ordinary woman.
Come on, guys, you gotta admit, when Linda Carter spins from and turns it from Diana Prince into Wonder Woman, it's a special moment for everybody, and you just go, yay!
Yes. Yes, it is.
Totally different reason for on your end, I'm sure.
No, it's just really cool. I mean, it's exciting. You still get a charge when you see it. That's not, you know, not me being a pig. We like to see... You know, it's good to watch Wonder Woman just to see Linda Carter stand there. But, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I'm not going to lie, but, you know. The Amazons place the plane's occupants back exactly as they were found, and with Wonder Woman at the helm, the craft takes off. She revives the passengers and crew and exits to her waiting invisible plane. When Steve comes to, he overpowers Gorham, and he and the others are unaware that several days have passed. Meanwhile, Dr. Solano and his flunky are surprised to see the plane's secret transmission reappear after 2 days.
At the airport in Samaria, Latin America, Steve and his guests learn of their lost 2 days, but can make no sense of it. Steve meets his new associate, Diana Prince, who he remembers from the hypnotic suggestion. At the conference, Steve and Diana meet Gloria Marquez, representing the country of Gonorrhea.
Gonorrhea.
Sorry, sounds like gonorrhea. Who seems...
Wanaray.
Still sounds like it, but anyway. Who seems happy to see Steve, but not Diana. Gloria introduces the conference chairman, Dr. Solano. Diana notes Solano is Spanish for the poisonous nightshade plant.
Dun, dun, dun. Steve tells the conference of the U.S.'s plans to fly the plan in via airlift for security reasons. Also for those reasons, he can't relate any specifics to the mission. Later, Solano and Gloria plot to get information about the airlift from Steve. Solano wants the nuclear plant so he can upset the balance of world power, allowing him to eventually ascend to world domination. Of course he does.
Of course. How Ra's al Ghul of him.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C., several days later. At Interagency Defense Command headquarters, Diana is given a tour and meets IRAC, Informational Retrieval Associative Computer, or IRA as it's called. Diana manages to hack IRA and falsify information on her in its system. Diana takes some ancient drachma coins her mother gave her to a coin dealer and manages to get $75,000 for them, which, come on, in 1977 was quite a bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
And ain't much to seize that now either.
Yep.
This allows her to rent an apartment and buy some clothes. While on her shopping spree, she is tailed by Gloria. Later that night, Solano sends Gloria to Diana's new home, where she plants a bug in her phone. Diana walks in on the masked Gloria and a fight ensues. Gloria activates a gas bomb and escapes. Diana changes to Wonder Woman but is unable to find her assailant. Diana calls Steve while Solano listens on.
The Interagency Defense Command Headquarters, Washington, D.C. Diana meets the IADC staff, including Joe Atkinson, on the way to an Air Force base to set up the airlift. Steve and Diana are ambushed by a car and a truck. As the drivers attack Steve, Diana runs off to change to Wonder Woman. The thugs attempt to exchange Steve's watch for a duplicate, and Wonder Woman makes quick work of them, while Gloria films the whole thing from a secluded car. Turning her tiara into a boomerang, Wonder Woman hobbles one of the attackers, and with her magic lasso learns that the watch they tried to replace contained a bugging device. Steve awakens to meet Wonder Woman, who he knows from all the tales his father told him of her.
Wonder Woman? Here now?
That's right. Are you sure you're all right?
Well, I've had better mornings. What happened to those guys that jumped me?
Well, They tried to substitute a watch exactly like yours for your own. I suppose there was some kind of electronic device in it.
It's a bug. I would have gone into that top secret Air Force briefing bugged. And you stopped them.
Yes. I also questioned them, but they were hired simply for one job and knew nothing more.
And you made them tell the truth with the lasso.
That's right. I can also make them forget everything that happened. You know all about that?
Sure. When I was a kid, my father raised me on stories about Wonder Woman. How they worked together and all the adventures that they had. I used to think he exaggerated.
Your father was a very truthful man.
He must have been. He also said you were gorgeous. You must have known him well.
Yes, I did. From the J-shaped burn scar on his right shoulder to the 20-millimeter shell casing he used as a paperweight.
That's right. Hey, wait a minute. You couldn't have known him. Why, you can't be more than 23 or 24. Come on, tell me the truth. Are you a relative of this Wonder Woman? Is there an organization or what?
You want the truth?
Yeah.
All right. There is no organization. Only myself, Wonder Woman. And as for age, I will be 2,527 years old on my next birthday.
Yeah. Well, you're in pretty good shape for your age. All right, all right. You don't have to tell me. You helped me out, and I appreciate it. You're everything my father said you were.
Thank you, Steve. And if you ever need me, I'll appear, wherever or whenever.
That mean we're going to get to know each other better?
Solano and Gloria review their footage and speculate who Wonder Woman is. Gloria digs up records of her World War II career. Solano wonders if she may be a robot, since he has one of his own. A stone-faced automaton clad in silver from head to toe and a heck of a good fencing partner. Solano plans to pit his robot against Wonder Woman. And, in the event that it loses, Solano can activate its nuclear power source, creating a small atomic bomb to take out his enemy and everything around her.
At IDAC headquarters, Steve is visited by Gloria, who asks him to stop by the committee reception that night. Gloria speaks of good neighbor policy and then shows how neighborly she is by planning a big wet one on him. Diane is suspicious of Gloria, but can't place why. Later at Solano's HQ, he and Gloria attend a surgical unveiling, a man made to look exactly like Steve Trevor.
That night on Embassy Row in Washington, D.C., Gloria wastes no time in whisking Steve away, where he is assaulted, drugged, and replaced by his new doppelganger. The fake Steve asks Diana to stay at the dinner as an official representative while he heads to the base alone.
Later, Blanding's Air Force Base. Fake Steve briefs the flight crew and tells them of a change to the mission. They will now deliver the plant components to a small airstrip in Gonneray. Steve warns them to not listen to anyone who orders them to change course without the failsafe code word of capsize. Solano and Gloria head to Gonneray to intercept the planes, while fake Steve and Diana return to her apartment, where he invites himself in and forces himself upon her. Sensing something is up, Diana tricks the imposter into making a blunder concerning a war wound that Steve's father had. Diana manages to run away and change into Wonder Woman, who forces the imposter to spill his guts thanks to her magic lasso. She finds and frees the real Steve at Solano's estate.
The Air Force cargo planes fly toward Gonneray. Steve radios the lead pilot, who refuses to change course without the failsafe, which only the imposter knows. Wonder Woman can get the failsafe code word out of him, but she suggests that they go on to Gonneray to stop Solano before calling off the airlift.
Solano's secret airfield on Gonneray. Solano and Gloria await the convoy arrival with armed guards while Wonder Woman and Steve approach the airstrip in her invisible plane. The two arrive, and while Wonder Woman captures Solano, Gloria has Steve at gunpoint. Solano proposes a duel with sabers to settle their conflict. Wonder Woman agrees, and the battle begins. Surprisingly, Solano manages to hold his own against the superpowered Wonder Woman. Suspecting foul play, Wonder Woman slashes at Solano's face, revealing a robot underneath a very convincing mask. The real Solano controls the robot from the mind, and when Wonder Woman defeats him, he activates the failsafe, thus activating the bomb, which blows part of the mind. Steve radios the air convoy to change course back to Samara.
Back at IDA HQ, Steve talks to the president, who is pleased to have Wonder Woman's help. Steve tells Diana that he hopes they see her again. Diana says he can count on it and smiles.
Of course she does. This held up far better than I expected it to,
yeah,
honestly.
It did.
I mean, we watched this last night kind of thinking, ah, well, you know, it's kind of, because I'll be honest. I tend to watch the World War II episodes.
Me too.
In the back of my head, I always thought they were better. But, I might have to revisit that because this is less campy than the World War II ones. So there was a campiness about the World War II episodes. Not, she wasn't campy.
No.
She always played it sincere, but kind of like everybody else around her, there was a kind of a campiness to it, partially because of Stanley Ralph Ross developed the show for TV and wrote the pilot, and he was a big writer on Batman.
Gotcha.
So, he's still credited as, you know, developing this for TV, but I don't think he was as involved at this point. It wasn't bad at all, and, you know, especially compared to the Kathy Lee Crosby movie, which wasn't as bad as
bad
either, but, you know, this felt, of course, felt a lot more like Wonder Woman. You still got the theme song by Charles Fox. They changed the lyrics a little bit to, you know, they had to get rid of the Axis and all that stuff.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people forget that they actually changed the title of the show to The New Adventures of Wonder Woman, but they did. And I think at some point they're just back to calling it Wonder Woman, but in season three, but I could be wrong. They kept changing the opening credits and the lyrics. They had lyrics and they didn't have lyrics. They had just had Wonder Woman, and at some point they didn't have any lyrics at all, I don't think. So the couple things, when Gorham, you know, he just starts gassing the people in the plane, why didn't he go into the cockpit and gas the pilots, take control of it, and then gas the other people in the plane? He made the gas get up in there to the pilots while he wasn't in there to take control of the plane.
I think it would have worked better in reverse order. Gas Steve and them, and then go to the plane.
That's what he tried to do, but Steve intercepted him. But
what reason would he have had to go up to the front, to the forefront?
Mm-hmm. That's true. I don't know. It didn't seem like a very good... The Solano's got everything plotted out pretty well, but this didn't seem like it made a whole lot of sense. But, okay. So when we finally see Wonder Woman, we see Diana on the island. She's rocking a, you know, nice little purple dress.
Right, but that purple dress, oh my. It was very sheer. I'm pretty sure, I mean, we talked about whether... I mean, I think there was just panties and, you know, a little bra under that, and you could see, you know, it was very sheer.
Yeah. Well, it might have not been so sheer on old murky TVs in 1977, but on DVDs nowadays,
right.
High definition TVs, yeah, that didn't leave a whole lot to the imagination, which, you know, not complaining, you know. Ow.
You're gonna get hit a lot during this episode, I think.
I know, you suggested it. Why are you hitting me? Dr. Asclepia, which we can't pronounce.
Just forgive us, and, you know.
Yeah, we watched it last night. They only say her name once, I think, in the actual episode, so. But she basically takes the place of Paula here, mm-hmm, as, you know, the doctor who, you know, Paula was actually on the show as a villain. Of course, we've talked about Paula before. She was a villainess that Wonder Woman reformed in the comic books. I kept thinking I knew who the actress was that was playing the queen, who, as I said, they never call Hippolyta. You know, first, the first pilot movie had Cloris Leachman. And then in the first season, whenever Hippolyta showed up, it was Caroline Jones that played Morticia Adams.
Right.
But I kept thinking, who is this woman? I know I've seen her. She's the parapsychologist from Poltergeist.
Right, you said that.
Yeah, that they call in, end up calling in the little, you know, little lady that, this house is clean, you know, that one.
Mm.
Anyway, when Diana flashbacks to Steve as she's looking at his son, and that's actually a nice touch. You see a couple scenes from the first series, and that's one of the few times that you actually get the feeling beyond just flirtation that they actually had romantic feelings, like, for one another. Because they never, even though this show was in the 70s and not in the 50s like The Adventures of Superman was, there wasn't a whole lot of flirtation. There wasn't a whole lot of deep flirtation between them. It was just like kind of surface flirting, which they, you know, they've talked about that in magazines and books I've read, that they kind of just, you know, it was a family show, and, you know, they basically didn't want to get into that, but it's kind of surprising that they didn't go a little bit deeper. This was probably about as deep as they ever got. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of get just the look on her face of, you know, this is what I let go when I came back here type thing.
Yeah, but then it's just...
Because it's his son.
Yeah.
She's a cougar. Wonder Woman's a cougar. Especially since she's over 2,000 years old.
Yeah.
I used to call BS on Steve looking just like his dad, but now I see pictures of me when I was our son's age that he is now. I see myself in pictures at that age, and then I look at Andrew, and I'm like, you know, poor kid.
No.
So I can't really call BS on it as much as I used to. When they do the bullets and bracelets thing, you get the same music in the costumes that you got in the first episode, and then later you saw them like on the Wonder Girl episodes mm-hmm. with Deborah Winger. You know, so that's kind of neat. Neat throwback. One thing I do got a question is, I've always wondered this in the comic books, you know, until Steve Trevor set foot on the island, no man had ever set foot on Paradise Island. So where in the heck did they get bullets, guns, and to do bullets and bracelets? Where did they get them from? And here they're like pearl handled revolvers. So they either, you know, Wonder Woman borrowed a set off Patton in World War II, or she met the Lone Ranger at some point.
But you have to think, you know, if you're going with the comic book explanation of that, they had the sphere of time that they could look and see, and if they saw it,
maybe they just build their own.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and they maybe ships that washed up there in the Bermuda Triangle, and you know, but
yeah.
But as you said, you never get tired of Wonder Spins.
No.
And when she does the first one, that was really cool. I remember when on the Justice League, the episode Justice League Unlimited, the episode with the Viking Prince and Wonder Woman's, they're trying to get the Viking Prince's ship out of the glacier, and she's at that conference, and she does the spin, and you're just like, and then when she was on The Brave and the Bold, and they actually used the Wonder Woman theme music from here, and that was really cool. So yeah, that's the thing. This version of Wonder Woman informs so much of, especially what the outside world knows of Wonder Woman. Uh-huh. This is their version of Wonder Woman.
Right, right.
I mean, you know, so, you know, it makes sense. And it's only smart that they pull elements from that in, because this, the Wonder Spin's something Linda Carter came up with on her own. Because she basically like, well, how are we going to do, you know, she said, well, what if I just spin around, you know? So.
And she was trained as a dancer, so it looks pretty.
Right. She doesn't just like, you know, she spins in the, like, you know, in the center. Her body spins, you know, straight up and down. She doesn't wobble back and forth.
Right.
And, you know, because it's almost, I mean, I know they do the explosion effect, and when it comes so that, you know, they can kind of hide a little bit of the transition, but it's almost always flawless.
Yes.
How it translates, it transitions in, so. Dr. Solano is a very intense villain, but he mumbles a lot. Did you notice that?
He was not a good public speaker.
Yeah, just like, oddly enough, this guy's the actor Fritz Weaver. I looked him up on IMDb. Of course, I'm not familiar with him, but he's nominated for several Tonys and awards, and he's a narrator on a lot of History Channel documentaries, which is interesting considering he's kind of mumbly.
Mumbly, yeah.
He's got a good voice, but he starts off talking like this. Then he says, like, you know, it's like speaking to the microphone. okay, let's get this out of the way. Somehow, the invisible plane has become an invisible jet.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a dart. It looks like a lawn dart now. But oddly enough, Diana says that the engine she hears off Steve's jets, it's definitely a plane, but it doesn't sound like any engine I've ever heard.
Uh-huh.
It's a jet engine now, right? But somehow she has an invisible jet. So
let it go.
Okay, this part I can't let go. The model of the invisible plane is hilarious. It's bad. I mean, the Mego 3 3/4 comic action invisible plane looks better than their invisible plane. We talked about that with Gene. It definitely does. And the little doll that looks like a Barbie that they customized.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a Mego Wonder Woman doll.
No.
They shove it. And then later you see Steven there.
I actually think, now I would have to look and find out, but I kind of think it is a really small model, and I think it's a Dawn doll, which is a 6-inch doll.
Really?
Or a Rock Flower, which is also made by Mattel.
That's, you know, usually when they do stuff like that, they'll build a pretty good size model. You know, I mean, there's so little to it, it does look like it's really small.
See, that's what I'm thinking. And see, they're 6 inches, and the proportions would be correct because they are actually based on the molds of Barbie. Rock Flower dolls are.
Oh, okay.
So they are shrunk down, and that particular hairstyle was available as a Rock Flower doll.
Okay.
Sorry, here's a little.
No, that's okay. I mean, it always looked kind of. It always looked pretty bad, actually. When they show it in close-up in the cockpit, it looks better than the season one. It looks less plasticky.
Yeah.
It looks like it's made of like glass now instead of plastic.
Yeah.
Which is cool. But, you know, it's... The Invisible Plane... The Invisible Plane is one of those things that's really cool in the comics and on cartoons, but it's just... In the technology they had then, I mean...
It doesn't translate well into live action at that time.
No. And then you've got, you know, then you've got people interpreting it in different ways now, like Darwin Cook in the New Frontier. It looked like just Wonder Woman was sitting in the air. The only time you could tell what the shape of it was is when she was all bloodied up coming in after that battle with the island and everything, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, and in the animated version of that too, which was cool. But so we meet Gloria, who's Jessica Walter. Most people know her from Arrested Development. I never watched that show. I'm sorry. I understand it's good. I've just never got around to watching it. But I actually know her best as the psycho caller lady from Play Misty for Me with Clint Eastwood.
Right.
And she's like super creepy. That's like the original Basic Instinct movie, you know?
Yeah, I remember.
Or what was the movie? Not Basic Instinct. What's the movie with Glenn Close and Michael Douglas? The Boiling Rabbit movie. You know what we're talking about.
Yeah,
I can't think of it off the top of my head, but you know the movie we're talking about.
Basically, the cautionary tale of don't ever cheat on your wife, because then she will be a crazy, and so will your wife, and you will die.
She has other comic cred around this time. Jessica Walter, changing the subject. She played the villainous Morgan Le Fay in the Doctor Strange TV pilot movie.
Oh, okay.
Right around the same time with Mr. Permhead, Mike Brady guy as Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm.
So let me get this straight. Steve says the U.S. can fly the plant in and then have it up and running in a month. So is this a prefab nuclear power plant?
I mean, is it tiny? What's the deal?
I mean, it's like a trailer. It's a nuclear power plant trailer.
Get it together.
We got one of them double wide nuclear power plants out here.
Oh.
It's sitting on cinder blocks, and there's a car out front with grass growing up through. Sorry, I'm getting punchy. Ira looks like a light bright.
Oh, yeah. I think it was.
I even thought that when I was a kid. I mean, I had a light bright, of course. You know,
yeah.
Everybody had a light bright, right? And I was just like, that thing looks like a light bright. When Diana's talking to the coin dealer, there's a cute bit where she almost slips up.
Yeah, she's like, well, I knew, blah, blah, blah.
Prince so-and-so, whoever the coins came from.
Yeah.
She's just like, you know, and he's like, what? You know, the guy's like, oh. Then Gloria, there's a nice cat fight between Diana and Gloria in the apartment, which they, like the queen said, she does not have her powers when she's Diana.
Right.
So she does a wonder spin, she doesn't have powers. That is forgotten later on in our episode. I will just put it out there and we'll get to it later.
Yes.
It may be forgotten later on in the series. I don't know.
Right.
But I don't think it is. Norman Burton was in the credits as Joe Atkinson. He has got like two lines in this episode, and I don't think he was on the series that long.
And I'm sorry, but it was crazy that they introduced him, said, "Oh, I've been around forever." But
knew Roosevelt, worked for under Roosevelt.
Yeah, knew Franklin Delano Roosevelt. You would think that there'd been something with, "Oh, I remembered a Diana Prince that worked here back in."
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I guess back then they were working for the Army Air Corps back then, but.
But still yet.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, as pretty as Linda Carter is.
Yeah.
Don't you think? And I mean, women working with the Army were a novelty at that time. There were very few and far between. Don't you think she would be remembered not only, A, just for being a female, and two, for being a gorgeous female?
Right. I mean, the whole...
And the same name!
And Lyle Wagner even has mentioned this. He's like, you know, he always thought it was... He's mentioned that Steve was a dope, and he kind of enjoyed playing him once he figured out that, you know, Steve is the female... He's the male Lois Lane.
Yeah.
You know, and he's constantly getting saved, and he blunders into stuff, and he's like, I'll have a gun trained on a guy, and, you know, then he'll bend down, knock it out of my hand, then Wonder Woman's got to save me. He's like, how effective of a secret agent or a you know, military hero was I, really, you know?
Yeah.
So he kind of just figured out, he eventually just kind of went with it, and kind of, that's why he plays him kind of so affably, somewhat goofy, you know?
Yeah.
Because he figures that's kind of the role he's playing, right?
Yeah.
So... you know, but he didn't, you know, Wonder Woman, when Wonder Woman was Diana, she put her hair up, put her glasses on, but she was still gorgeous, you know. I mean, so it's like, even more so than, you know, when Christopher Reeve is Clark Kent and he, you know, slicks his hair down and, you know, and scrunches his neck up and, you know, that's more of an effective transformation. You can't unpretty Linda Carter.
Yes. No.
You know, you could put bird poop in her hair and tree limbs and she'd still be gorgeous.
Yes. And still is.
Yeah.
She is.
So, but it's kind of interesting because there was side characters that came in and out of the show that just kind of came and went and disappeared a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you never, a lot of shows were like that back then, but like in the first season you had Etta Candy and the General Blankenship, and then they're now, of course, they moved up forward. That makes sense. They're gone, but this Joe Atkinson will disappear after a few episodes, and they'll bring in an African American lady that works with them, and I think she eventually disappears. And then at the end of season three, at the last episodes, they were moving Diana to the California office of the IADC, and it was. Some people wondered if Lyle Wagner was even going to be on there the next season.
Mm.
So they were maybe going to write him out of it. So it's kind of interesting. I guess they figured as long as they had Linda Carter.
Yeah.
But they do give Steve a lot to do in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's not apparent here. It's definitely like he's the co-lead of the show in this episode. One thing that was always real impressive about this show was the stunts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were always very well done. Linda Carter did quite a few of them, you can see. You know, up in camera, but her main stunt woman was a lady named Jeannie Epper, and she was, you know, just awesome. I mean, all the jumps and leaps and things she did. And she even, I was reading on this, she was Kathy Lee Crosby's stunt double.
Oh.
As her Wonder Woman. So, there you go. She played Wonder Woman more than anybody, probably.
Probably so.
Yeah, there's a cute picture of them. If you probably find it online, she's holding Linda Carter up like, you know, Shaggy and Scooby-Doo almost.
Oh, yeah.
She's in her arms, you know, and Linda Carter's got this big goofy grin on her face. And, of course, she's probably, you know, more muscled than Linda Carter. But although they do a good job. You pointed that out. I forgot to put that in the notes. When Diana pulls Steve out of the plane, Linda Carter somehow is carrying Lyle Wagner. And it doesn't, and they move. I'm like, well, they must have him on a cart.
Right.
But the camera goes around her at some point. And she doesn't. I don't know how they did it. I know they, even in the 40s.
See, I'm almost wondering if it wasn't one of those adjustable stools that had a big bucket seat on it that was backless. I got to thinking about that after we talked about
that. Could have been.
And it was on rollers.
Could have been, yeah. Yeah, it could have been.
Because it was higher. If you notice, when you're holding somebody, he's higher up. Then, you know, he's like about up here.
Right.
a little bit higher than waist level would be.
Now, I know that they used to put, like, kind of like what you have lumbar support now. They give people belts, like, you know, like in monster movies. Like, I've seen pictures where they're putting one on Lon Chaney in a Mummy movie, Lon Chaney Jr., because he's got to carry everybody around, you know. So they might, I doubt they did that for her, but you know, it's very well done. It's effectively done. The action scene where Wonder Woman, you know, saves Steve from the guys that come out of the cars in the truck, the car in the truck, she's running through the trees. That was used in the credits later when she's holding the car in the truck. She actually grabs a hold of both bumpers.
Yeah.
And that was used in opening credits later on. It's a cool scene. Solano seems to be very well-educated, smart. Knows everything. How come he doesn't remember Wonder Woman?
Right.
I'm just like, how could you not remember that? You know, it's like, especially in this universe where apparently she's the only superpowered person.
It'd be like not knowing, I mean, as far as being removed from the time and stuff like that, you know, I know who Babe Ruth is. I have absolutely no interest in sports myself, but I know who Babe Ruth is.
Right, exactly.
You know, yeah. I know who Muhammad Ali is.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's one of those things that you would think would be common canon.
Right.
For everybody.
Right, but they have to look her up, so.
But he is in a different country, so.
Right, that could be. The show kind of jumps the shark a little bit with the robot.
Uh-huh.
He opens the door, and the robot, he looks short. It looks like a very short person in a...
Yeah.
It looks like, I mean, not a dwarf or anything.
No, but probably somebody about my height, a little over 5 foot.
And their makeup, the mask that they have on looks like, I don't know if you've ever seen I've never actually seen the movie, but I've seen parts of it. The silent film of the Golem, you know, the Jewish legend, the Golem. And his face kind of looks like that. You know, he was made from clay and everything. And then for a comic book fans, he kind of looks like Bizarro from the Superboy TV show later.
Right, I'm saying that.
But he's all in silver, so it's just kind of strange. And then they fence because it was the 70s and everybody fenced. I mean, there was even an episode of Happy Days where they fenced.
Yeah.
And what was the deal with fencing in the 70s? I don't get it. I don't know. And another 70s trope, you have to have an episode where you... have somebody have plastic surgery to look like one of the lead characters. If not do that, then you got to clone them like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So I mean,
didn't you know that?
I think it's a SAG bylaw. I don't know. It's like, you know, at some point during this, you know, if you sign a contract for a series, it's like at some point in this series, you will have an episode where you are cloned or you are impersonated so you can play the evil version of you.
Yeah.
So, you know, Gloria's got Steve's number just by coming on to him, you know. And it's like, yeah, what kind of super spy agent is this guy? You know, it's like, he's like, you know.
I'm going to get me some. Yay, let me give you all my secrets.
This is kind of compromising because, you know, we're not going taking this plant to your country, but I'll make out with you, why not? You know, it's... but even worse, Bad Steve's an even worse horn dog because he's... coming on Diana and clearly jeopardizing the mission, you know, by doing so because he's acting out of character.
Yeah.
I mean, he does, you know.
But at the same time, do you really blame
him? I guess.
He thinks, I think she likes Steve. I look like Steve. I'm going to seize my opportunity here.
Seize the day. Yeah, maybe. As great as Jeannie Epper is, when Wonder Woman and, well, actually, yeah, when Wonder Woman and Steve fight, the stunt double for Lyle Wagner looks absolutely nothing like him.
No.
It's
kind of like a whole Shatner's double on Star Trek.
Oh, don't get me started again. Back to another Wonder Woman episode. So, this part really, I mean, I enjoyed this. I did. But the ending bit where they go to Gonorrhea, Wonder Woman and Steve fly in the invisible plane to Gonorrhea, which it looks even worse with the little doll of Steve in the plane.
Yeah, most definitely.
And then Wonder Woman's plan is to jump up on a shed and stand there triumphantly with her hands on her hips, and Steve to just wander into the middle of a bunch of people with machine guns.
Well, you know, seems reasonable.
Why didn't she just jump in the middle of them and start taking them out?
Well, yeah.
And, you know, but... And so, of course...
Or he has a gun. Shoot him from a distance.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, where's his gun? You know, it's like... And so, of course, Steve gets taken hostage, you know, at gunpoint. And that's just the setup so Wonder Woman can fight Solano,
mm-hmm.
the sword fight, who ends up, of course, being a robot. A robot that apparently gets his rubber mask from the same place Batman used to, because he used to, you know, just put rubber mask over his cowl
mm-hmm.
and rip the mask off and... You know, somehow it fit over his cowl with his ears. And even in the 70s when his ears were really long, you know. So, and even though the robot had a very craggy, faceted, wide, squat head, the very thin, elongated head of Solano fit over top of this robot's head. Which
mm-hmm.
the big deal was, you know, Wonder Woman defeated the robot. He activated the nuclear failsafe in the robot's chest. And so Wonder Woman threw the robot into the mine, and the explosion that happened afterwards looked like it might have been made by an M80.
Oh, it was pitiful.
I mean, it was, I mean, I set off bigger explosions with fireworks. You know? So, oh, sorry.
You were so big when you were younger.
So, Do they think Solano and Gloria are dead? Because, you know, Wonder Woman's kind of like, I'm not sure, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't, from looking through IMDb and memory of my own, it doesn't look like they return at any point, which is a shame.
Right.
And then, of course, Linda Carter smiles at the camera, but with a smile like that.
Ding!
You know, yeah, I mean, just so her little teeth, ding, you know. So. I enjoyed this, like I said.
Yeah,
I did.
I'll be honest, I have a wonderful love for the first season. And it had been a long time since I had watched an episode of the 70s season. Honestly, I have the second and the third season because they were really cheap.
Yeah, right.
And
Linda Carter.
Because it's Linda Carter. And, you know, I bought them just to have them. They were really cheap. I'm like, well, I'll go ahead and get them. This might be the first time I've watched a 70s episode, even though we've had this box set for a long time.
Right. I think I've watched a couple with Danny, seems like. But, because I remember I saw the one where she actually, and we'll talk about that later, where she's like somebody throws her off a roof and she actually spins in midair and turns into Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that, which is cool. I haven't seen a whole lot of them, you know, so I was surprised. I had kind of in my head said, you know, when they moved it up to the 70s, it wasn't as good. It lost its personality. It could have been interchangeable with the $6 Million Man or
right.
Bionic Woman, you know, more specifically. Yeah. But I might have to rethink that.
I know. You know, I'm going to watch a couple more episodes and see.
There's an episode I really want to check out. I had forgot this. It's kind of got a double comic connection because there's a villain in it that's pretty much like the Toy Man.
Okay.
And he's played by Frank Gorshin. So it's like the Toy Man and the Riddler at the same time, which is cool. You know, it's been said a million times, but but until you watch an episode, you forget how perfectly cast and convincing Linda Carter really is as Wonder Woman. You know, like we said, she is to Wonder Woman what Christopher Reeve is to Superman. And like we said before, also possibly more so because she is the only live action one that we know of.
Right.
That's made it out. So I don't envy anybody that comes after.
Has to follow her shoes.
Yeah.
Try and fit her shoes.
Yeah. You know, which, I mean, even as we get to the comic we're going to talk about, right there on the cover, it says, based on the classic series starring Linda Carter. I mean, her name's on the front. Adam West and Burt Ward's name, I don't think we're on the cover of
Batman
66 number one or any issue afterwards. So that just goes to show you,
mm-hmm.
you know. So. Well, we'll take a break with that, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Wonder Woman 77 special number one.
Aquaman and Firestorm fighting crime together. Soak them down or burn them up. No one does it better. Whenever you find trouble, they'll always be there to catch them in a bubble or even torch their hair. Stand for truth and justice in sea, on land, and air. Firestorm and Aquaman, they make a super pair.
The Fire and Water Podcast, celebrating Aquaman, King of the Seven Seas, and Firestorm, the Nuclear Man.
Available weekly on Aquaman Shrine, Firestorm Fan, and on iTunes and Stitcher.
I'm one of your hosts, the Irredeemable Shag, here to talk about Firestorm. Along with me is my co-host, Rob Kelly, here to talk about some guy that talks to fish.
Really? You're going to pull this crap during the promo? Bad enough, I have to put up with your shenanigans every week, but...
So we're back, and as we promised, we're going to talk about Wonder Woman 77 special number one. What do you got on this one?
Okay. I was really jazzed about this. I had heard about the series. It's available digitally. However, we have crappy internet, and trying to download that would have killed it. And I was like, well, I'll just wait until they collect it into a regular format. And I had pre-ordered it probably 4 or 5 months ago. And we have a comic shop that we go to. It's called Heroes Realm. It's owned by the Ethertons. And it's our comic shop that we go to in Lexington. Mm-hmm. And I had ordered it 4 or 5 months ago and said, when this comes out, please get it for me. I'm not sure when it's going to be there. And lo and behold, we went up there on our last visit, and it was in my file. And I literally did the happy dance when he told me. He said, look, it came. It came in your file. I was like, yay! Everybody in the comic store turned around and looked at me.
And they were having a magic tournament, so.
Yeah, so, you know. But anyway, they did, of course, did the digital comic, and then they collected it into the print version, which I picked up. It has a publication date of June of 15, which, of course, is the month we're in. The writer for this is... And I struggle
Mark
with these.
Mark Andraco.
And we're going to let Chris read this because I struggle with the names.
Okay. Writer Mark Andraco. The artist for chapter one is Drew Johnson. Cover art by Nicola Scott and Annette Kwok. Colorist Romulo Fajardo Jr. Letterer Wes Abbott. Associate editor Jessica Chen. Group editor Jim Chadwick. Wonder Woman created by William Moulton Marston, of course.
Okay, now the way this comic is divided is there are two separate stories, and then each of those stories is set into three different parts. So the first one we're going to talk about is part one, Disco Inferno, The Velvet Ropes. This comic finds Wonder Woman rescuing Dr. Polchevik, a Russian scientist from a group of female Russian roller derby rejects. Steve Trevor wonders how Diana knew how to tip off Wonder Woman to the potential kidnapping. They turn their attention to the next potential victim, Dr. Sergei Topavia, a recent defector to the U.S., and he's making the most of his new home. Diana and Steve will have to go undercover and get into Studio 52, the hottest night spot in New York City. Diana dons an outfit reminiscent of her 60s comic agent look, while Steve puts his chest on display all the way down to his navel. Oh my.
Think Disco Nightwing.
Uh-huh. They spot Dr. Topavia right away, but getting to him proves difficult. On the stage is the Silver Swan and the Starlings. Part 2. Disco Inferno, Blood on the Dance Floor. Artist Drew Johnson and Matt Haley. Wonder Woman senses there is more to Silver Swan's song than meets the eye. Meanwhile, Steve approaches Dr. Topavia, who rebuffs him. Silver Swan, on receiving a signal, puts the club under a trance. Wonder Woman seizes the opportunity to do a diving change into her Wonder Woman costume. Wonderful. It was the best. When you pick up this comic, it was my favorite scene of this whole storyline. It was just boom. Great, wonderful scene. Wonder Woman proceeds to take out several of the gun-toting goons. After receiving her next directive, Silver Swan sends the disco ball crashing towards Wonder Woman, which Wonder Woman, of course, makes short work of. Next, Silver Swan sends the club attendees against Wonder Woman, including Steve. Part 3. Staying Alive. Artist Matt Haley and Richard Ortiz. To snap Steve out of his murderous intent, Wonder Woman uses her magic lasso. This still leaves Agent Trevor and Wonder Woman facing the coming onslaught. Steve directs Wonder Woman to take Topavia out of the line of fire, which she does by depositing him on top of a large moon decoration hanging from the ceiling. Wonder Woman next turns her attention to Silver Swan and the Starlings. Wonder Woman makes short work of the Starlings while Steve puts his marksman skills to use and knocks out the stereo system, thus breaking the Swan's thrall over the crowd. The Silver Swan then tries to pit her voice against Wonder Woman. However, Wonder Woman uses a handy record thrown with her Amazon strength to strike the Swan in the throat and thus take her down, and then she remands her into police custody. Wonder Woman makes a quick getaway to turn back into Diana and rejoin Steve for a trip to the dance floor.
Yeah, I liked it. You know, you start out with Russian roller derby squad. Why not? You know,
yeah, so yeah.
Then you have Studio 54. It becomes Studio 52 because probably the new 52.
I would assume, yeah.
Didn't want to call it Studio 54. And you're right, Diana's disco outfit looks quite a bit like her 70s karate chopping days when she usually wore white.
Oh, and what did you think of the cover art on the comic?
Oh, yeah, the cover art by Nicola Scott is gorgeous. I wish she'd drawn the whole thing, honestly, because the art's not bad, but the style kind of gradually morphs. It's kind of weird because it, like, starts out photorealistic more, and then...
Well, there's several artists throughout,
yeah. Oh,
so,
I know.
You know.
I know, but I'm saying that the different chapters are drawn. Sometimes they're tag-teamed by... There's, like, a transition of artists as it goes, which kind of works, but by the end it gets kind of cartoony. But and then, of course, being based on a TV show, the likenesses come and go, you know. But it's, you know, overall, it's good. There's a couple of cute little touches, like it looks like, I don't know who they see outside. Dinah's like, is that? And Steve's like, it probably is. And it looks like Salvador Dali.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's somebody in a bird costume. I looked it up online. I could not figure out who that was supposed
to be. No, I
know.
And I did too. And I was like, I don't know.
The Blue Falcon? I have no
idea.
I don't know. A couple things here, though. Diana does a wonder jump in her civilian clothes. As we said, according to the Queen, she shouldn't be able to do that. So, until she spins, she can't do those things, but... The Silver Swan is actually an 80s Wonder Woman villain.
Right, right. I mean, she's not introduced till 1982
or something like
yeah.
that. It's the run by Roy Thomas and Gene Colan where they actually introduced the
double W
symbol, yeah. Like we said, she did the Wonder Woman spin in the air just like that TV episode I was talking about. So, yeah, I thought this was a good opening story because it firmly set that this series was in the 70s. You had the Cold War aspect. You had disco. You know, this definitely set the period straight away. You are in the 70s. You know?
Right, right.
So I thought that was a good touch. It's fun. It's cute. I prefer the second story better over this one. But this one with a few changes could have been an episode. You know?
Right.
I think this could have worked as an episode or at least part of an episode. Mm-hmm. The second story, not so much, although I prefer it. But this one could have actually worked within the framework of the TV series.
Okay. So let's go ahead and talk about the next story that's presented in the comic. And the overall title is Who is Wonder Woman? With part one being called Who's Sleeping in My Bed? The artist is Jason Badower, Badower.
Okay.
The story opens with Diana waking up in the middle of the street after apparently fainting. After assuring a police officer she's okay, she starts walking down the street. As she walks down the street, she asks an elderly woman, what is the day of the week? The elderly woman says, oh, you lucky girl. You know, basically that she was so blitzed, she doesn't know what day of the week it is. That's
right.
A great thing to have, apparently. Diana starts wondering about, you know, why have I lost time? But then she happens upon a bank robbery. She quickly ducks into an alley to change, but what's this? Nothing happens. She looks up to see a woman leaping across buildings. Next, we see a version of Wonder Woman. But guess what? It looks like Kathy Lee Crosby.
Dun, dun, dun.
Or at least an uncanny resemblance to Kathy Lee Crosby.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm going to say Kathy Lee Crosby because, let's face it, folks, that's who it's supposed to be.
Right.
She handily stops in to stop the bank robbers that are trying to get away. And here's the thing. She has super strength, like Linda Carter's version of Wonder Woman does, whereas Kathy Lee Crosby's version did not.
No.
So, you know, think about that.
Right.
Diana calls the office to talk to Steve Trevor, but it's the Kathy Lee Crosby version of Steve Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
And he just puts it off as a crank call.
Because Diana Prince is sitting right next to him,
exactly.
And it's Kathy Lee Crosby.
Exactly. So then next, Diana goes to her apartment, but she finds Hippolyta and Drusilla.
Which is their version of Wonder Girl.
Yep. Part 2, My Own Worst Enemy, with the artist of Matt Haley. Hippolyta and Drusella turn out to be, this is weird, Julia Capitellis and her daughter Vanessa, who are from the comic books.
The George Perez run, yes.
Yes. And they don't know who Wonder Woman is. So, or Diana is, rather, because she's Diana at this point. They don't know who Diana is. And so she runs out of the apartment only to be confronted by Kathy Lee Crosby, who calls her Mrs. Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Another nod to the comic books. And says she needs to get back to the hospital. A fight ensues with a hobo leading aid. The hobo turns out to be Lyle Wagner's version of Steve Trevor, who calls her Diana and tells her to stop her. The Kathy Lee Crosby version of Wonder Woman. Wow, this is getting confusing. The fight begins again, and in the process, Diana's clothes are torn, and it reveals Wonder Woman's costume. She realizes, okay, what's going on here? So she uses her lasso on Kathy Lee Crosby to reveal she's a fake and shatters the illusion. It reveals it's Dr. Psycho, who has Wonder Woman hooked up to a dream machine. Part 3, Psychotherapy. Artist Matt Haley and Richard Ortiz. Dr. Psycho unleashes his backup plan. Wonder Woman now faces all of her former foes, such as Cheetah, Giganta, and
Silver Swan from the previous story. You get a Skrill alien and Zardor, who are from the same set of episodes from season 2 of Wonder Woman. And then you get Baroness Paula von Gunther, who actually was from both the comics and the TV show, as we said before, mm-hmm. in addition to Kathy Lee Crosby.
Right, right. So after a brief multi-person battle, Wonder Woman facing off against all of these different villains, Wonder Woman uses her lasso on herself to see the truth, which breaks the spell of Dr. Psycho. He tries to run away, but Wonder Woman catches him with her own lasso. He tries one more time to win, but Wonder Woman turns the table, and Dr. Psycho sees his own nightmare, a plethora of Wonder Women ready to wreak their vengeance. Wonder Woman returns him to prison with advice for them to up their security. Now, our next scene is we see Wonder Woman preparing a bath when Steve Trevor calls to invite Diana to see a chorus line. Diana begs off with a headache in order to enjoy her bubble bath.
Yeah, there you go. So, I think we even mentioned this on a previous episode. I had seen an image online when I was looking for Kathy Lee Crosby artwork for the Kathy Lee Crosby episode.
Mm-hmm.
I saw an image of her, you know, standing there in a comic, and I'm like, what the crap?
Right,
so,
right.
And as soon as I saw it, I'm like, where's Gene Hendricks? We need him. So Gene's probably like, I want no part of this. Actually, since we've done our Wonder Woman episode, Comic Book Central, which is a great podcast, I think we mentioned it before, Joe Stuber hosts that. He actually has done an interview with Kathy Lee Crosby.
Oh, okay.
So he has had her on the show. They talk about her whole career, but they talk about Wonder Woman. It's a really interesting episode, and she was really cool, and she seems like she's got a really great sense of humor about the whole Wonder Woman thing, and she, you know, she's candid about it, but she's definitely she enjoyed doing it. It was a really neat interview. That's a great series, great podcast anyway. So he's always interviewing people that are involved in TV shows and movies related to comics, so check that out. Like you said, the Kathy Lee Crosby Wonder Woman is much stronger than she
her
was
TV
on the
version,
movie.
Yeah.
And then you get what kills me is you got her Steve Trevor. He's got a mustache.
Oh, but
it's clearly him. He's got the same hairstyle and everything. And we've already pointed out that, you know, all the other little Easter eggs in there, but one thing that really got me is this story is so much like the Batman the Animated
yes,
Series episode.
Most definitely.
Perchance to Dream.
Mm-hmm, the one with Mad Hatter.
The Mad Hatter puts Batman in his...
Mm-hmm.
Although in Batman's case, it's supposed to be what makes him... You know, he's supposed to be happy there.
Right.
Because he's, you know...
I gave you the life that you wanted, so you'd stay out of mine.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Now, that, as far as I know, that's one of the first times that type of story was done. Later on, you had episodes of Buffy like that.
Mm-hmm.
You had an episode of Smallville like that.
Right.
Remember Jor-El was like a hand soap or something?
Yeah.
Remember? Things like that. Which was one of the better episodes of that show. But it's really fun here because they mix in all the comic characters. Of course, Dr. Psycho is a Wonder Woman villain from way back in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool that and he's probably one they could have actually done on the TV show. And she actually calls Cheetah Priscilla,
yeah,
which I thought was neat. So, which I don't know, you could say, well, Cheetah was on Super Friends, so if you want a good TV,
right.
Wonder, which we were watching that the episode last night, the Super Friends TV series actually followed that the train of thought that Wonder Woman had come to man's world in World War II. And was still active today,
mm-hmm,
in the 70s, because when they did the whole episode where Cheetah goes back in time and replaces her in the Amazonian games to pick a Wonder Woman,
mm-hmm,
they say it's 1941 or two or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they kind of followed the lead of this series. This was a year later. Challenge of the Super Friends was 78. So another little nitpick, though. Wonder Woman is flying. Later in this, she flies off of Dr. Psycho. She couldn't fly in this show, and she couldn't even really fly in the comic books back then. She could glide on air currents.
Yeah.
So she's like, you know, just taking off and flying, which I thought was kind of interesting. So,
which, interestingly enough, I am doing some reading. I'm getting ready to start that at the library. We're doing an air current experiment. Strictly because Wonder Woman flies on air currents.
Right. Well, your theme superheroes this
yeah.
year. And that she didn't come up with that. That's the state, right? Or is that national?
It's regional. It's most of the states are okay. doing it in this particular region. So you've got Ohio, Mississippi, you know, the Eastern Seaboard is all doing superheroes.
Oh, okay. Okay. The art, that art really started out great. The opening artwork was very... I mean, it looked exactly like Linda Carter,
yeah.
and then it changed as it went along, and it ended up more cartoony again. But it was still good, and it fit the story, and I really enjoyed it. This was a very fun book.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the only thing that gets me, though, is they, you know, it's a 77 special. I hope that they're going to do more of these, but it
right.
doesn't. It's not numbered number one. It's not.
Well, it's numbered number one on the cover. But it's a special.
Right.
It's not like Batman
60.
It's
yeah.
not Batman 66, which is an ongoing.
Right.
You know, of course, people are hoping there'll be a Superman 78 or a Superman 55 or.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, and actually I haven't got to read it yet, but there's a fan-produced comic out there that they have adapted the screenplay for a Superman movie that was proposed in the 50s. That would have had George Reeves as Superman, like Superman and the Secret Planet.
Oh.
And they've adapted that screenplay into a comic. But it's not official. But
okay.
it looks good. I mean, the artwork looked like George Reeves, so I'm going to have to read it. But
so is it online? Or?
Yeah, it's online.
Oh, okay.
I don't know the address, but you know, Google Superman and the Secret Planet and you'll find it. It looks really cool. Whoever the artist is, they've done a really good job of capturing George Reeves' likeness. So that's really cool. Yeah, I definitely hope we see more of these. There's some neat material at the back.
Mm-hmm.
An article by Andy Mangels, who, of course, is a Wonder Woman expert. An expert on a lot of comic-related things and a good writer, obviously, too. And there's photos and sketches by the different artists, and including Phil Jimenez, who didn't contribute to this. I think he did a variant cover. But, of course, he's a big fan of Linda Carter and has drawn... different there's that Back Issue magazine that we have out that's got this old issue of Back Issue. It's let's see, what issue number is it? It's way back. It's like issue number 5, so I doubt you're going to find it. You can still get it digitally, I think. It's got an Alex Ross cover on one side of Linda Carter,
mm-hmm.
and flip it over and it's got a Adam Hughes cover
right.
with Linda Carter, and it's a really great resource if you're a fan of the TV series. Lots of great artwork and photos and that. And then, of course, the Age of TV Heroes that we always reference, also published by Tomorrow's. So check those out. And, well, I have to end on a down note, but we were sorry to hear about the passing of Christopher Lee the other day as we record this. The news came out. I think he actually passed away about a week ago, but the news
right.
didn't really come out till later. We, of course, covered Horror of Dracula
mm-hmm.
a while back. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Hammer's Dracula series and Christopher Lee in general. So we were on vacation actually driving when you told me that. You read it on your phone. I was like, oh, man, way to ruin my vacation. Thanks.
I know. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, he had a great long life, but it's still a passing. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you think about it. And I know Christopher Lee was more than a horror actor. He was a great actor, but he was also, like you said, we were talking, he was like a secret agent for for British during World War II and spoke seven languages. And I mean, he was a worldly man and a gentleman by all standards. And he was knighted. I mean, he was Sir Christopher Lee.
Related to Robert E. Lee and King Charlemagne.
Huh. Both. And Ian Fleming.
Yes, they were step cousins.
Hmm.
And actually, Ian Fleming wanted him in the role of James Bond, according to the website. He was one of the people that he put on his list to be considered for the role.
Huh. Wow. That'd been interesting. Well, he said himself he felt like Timothy Dalton was the best James Bond, because he was closest to, and a lot of people say that, he was closer to the Fleming novels, which I've never read, actually. I'm a bad James Bond fan, but I've never read them.
Oh, well, I've tried to read them, and I'm just like, oh.
Well,
I've tried.
Different writing style, yeah.
I mean, you know, nothing.
But anyway, back to
Christopher. I digress.
Back to Christopher Lee. But there really is no other, he was the last of those horror icons. I mean, you had those actors from you had Lon Chaney Sr., then you had Karloff and Lugosi and Lon Chaney Jr.,
mm-hmm.
and then after them you had Vincent Price and Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. Well, Christopher Lee was the last of those guys.
Yeah.
And there's really none of those guys left. There's none of those horror
classic horror icons
that played multiple roles and stayed in that genre. Of course, he didn't just stay in that genre. He went outside of it. And everything he was in, he elevated, you know, because he was in it.
Star Wars, Lord of the Rings.
Right. And even the second Captain America TV movie.
Right.
With Red Brown, which, segueing in, next time on Supermates, it's going to be close to Independence Day here in the U.S., so we're going to talk about Captain America.
Yay!
And because everybody else has done every other Captain America story I want to do, thanks, guys. somebody may have done this, but I'm doing it anyway.
We call dibs.
We're going to cover the Adventures of Captain America Sentinel of Liberty miniseries from Cap's 50th anniversary in 1991. So we'll be covering that 4-issue series by Fabian Nicieza and Kevin Maguire and a bunch of other people because Kevin Maguire couldn't finish it. So we'll be covering that and talking about some how some of the elements of that made its way into one of our favorite films, Captain America: The First Avenger.
Because Chris Evans is awesome.
Chris Evans is awesome, but we think that for two different reasons.
He's just pretty.
Well, Hayley Atwell ain't no slouch either. So
hey, I can't disagree.
She'd make a good Wonder Woman.
Yeah, she would.
Yeah. Of course, we're always saying that they should have just cast Lady Sif.
Exactly.
Whose name escapes me at this moment because I can't think of it right now. But maybe that'd been too on the nose since she's already Lady Sif. But anyway. But we're just rambling at this point. So we'll see you guys next time and talk about Captain America. Bye.
Bye.
Supermates is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises Worldwide. The fictional characters and events mentioned in this show are trademark and copyright their respective owners. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their owners, and we mean no infringement by either. Thank you for listening to Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast.
Well, thank you very much, sir. I'm afraid that would be difficult. She finds us. It's not the other way around. Yes, sir. Goodbye.
Is the White House pleased?
Seems to be. In fact, if we could get Wonder Woman to the South Lawn, he'd probably pin a medal on her himself.
Oh, I don't think she's interested in medals. I think she came back to help you. Us.
Well, let's hope she comes around again.
I think you can count on it.